I believe that we are all love, and love is probably the most beautiful, highest vibration. And I believe that God created us in his image. Like our social structure right now, it was so different back then. Things are just constantly changing in that way. My only wish when I was like a kid was I wished everyone I loved were in heaven with me. As life went on and I experienced life, I was starting to realize that heaven is really just a state of mind. It's a vibration. I reckon hell is also a state of mind. Hell is complete separation from your God self.
Is there a relationship that you look back and be like, this was not a good relationship, I should have got myself mixed into this? It makes it hard to process. I don't, like, if we are really all one from the inside, why is there so much hate? Why is there so much trouble in the world? Welcome to the Discover You podcast. Today I'm joined with another special guest, and our topic today is going to be very interesting. As you know, the Discover You podcast is all about you. It's about you sharing your story, your perceptions and perspective of life. Well, this is a research project, like I always say, aiming to do is we're going to interview 10,000 people, and then at the end of it, we're going to sit around with psychologists and neurologists and some spiritual leaders and teachers and experts of theology, and we're going to see what journey people have taken to reach that state of fulfillment. And you know, fulfillment is a topic that we'll always talk about and we'll continue to talk about, to understand if people are fulfilled, are they not fulfilled, what are they doing differently, what are they doing wrong, what are they doing right, what do they think life should be or what life is to them. And today we have with you, well, I should say with us, a special guest, a very special guest, a good friend of mine. She's decided to join me today. Today we got Bernadette.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in, Bernadette.
Yeah.
I was quite excited when I reached out to you. I was like, you know what, I gotta get Bernadette on the podcast.
Yeah.
I've always admired your perception in life, and I'm hoping today we're gonna dig much deeper and understand.
Yeah, so cool, excited.
I think the first question the viewers are asking, who's Bernadette? And so that's the first question I'll ask you, Bernadette. Who's Bernadette to you? Like, who, how would you describe Bernadette?
Well, I'm a mom, but like everybody else, I'm just like everybody else who's listening here. I'm a human experiencing life in many different ways and forms, and just navigating through that and figuring out how to express my individual self in the fullest way, in the most beautiful way possible. Yeah, I mean, there's a saying that's we're all spiritual beings having human experiences, and that resonates with me a lot. So, yeah, don't feel as different from everybody. I just feel like a human.
Yeah, well, humans can be feeling a completely different way, right? But one of the first things you said was you described yourself as a mom.
Yes.
And then, like, I'm just looking into the words you use here. So we've had so many guests come into this podcast and they'll have all sorts of description of themselves. So you only accepted one title and the rest was not titles. They weren't titles. Yeah. So the only title you seem to be aligning yourself with is mother.
Motherhood or parenthood. For me personally, it's the most important job in the world. Personally, for me, it's the most fulfilling because the children are our future and we get to shape our future through them in the way that we raise them and take care of them and kind of just watch all of that unfold. And I suppose in like being a mom has taught me so much about myself because they're constantly reflecting what's going on inside of me, and that takes a lot of like conscious work.
Yeah.
And I know in my own childhood that it was like my parents like were incredibly reactive to things. Yeah. So I found that when I was a parent, I was beginning to be reactive to things as well that my children did. And I didn't want to repeat that. So I had to, you know, gain some knowledge and understanding of what was going on and how to change that. And yeah, raise my children differently so that the world can obviously be a better place and that people can experience just more beautiful, harmonious things.
Yeah. You said that the children are the future. I don't believe that.
You don't believe that? Why?
I think it's a saying people are just throwing out there.
Okay.
Like when you say children are the future for who? Future for what?
future for the collective consciousness. So like parenting the children, I suppose influencing that kind of influences everybody else around you, whether it's adults or children or not.
Mm-hmm.
Like, maybe really think here.
Well, no, I think it's been thrown around for so long that we actually have to think about that statement.
Yeah.
Children are the future. Future for what? What future are you talking about here?
I think future for a better place and future for the way that we interact with one another.
Yeah.
I don't know, coming into a world where we're more accepting of each other. So one of like the most important things to me while I parent is allowing a space for my children to express themselves emotionally, like all emotions on the spectrum, like angry, sad, and not to be reactive around that because, you know, like a lot of supposed people our age and people older get shamed and guilt for experiencing feelings like anger and sadness and depression and anxiety and all that. And so I just want to, for me personally, be able to provide a safe space for my children to feel those things without judgment. And it's been so humbling, actually, because for me, I tend to like be quite, I can get quite rageful or quite angry. And, but I'm conscious of this now. So when my children feel angry and sad and even rageful as well, like I remember like my role here. And I allow them that space to feel that, and I don't react, and I'm just consciously aware of what they're feeling. And I love them through it, and I'm just there and holding them. I'm not trying to stop them from crying. I'm not trying to stop them from being angry. I just allow them to go through the experience, and eventually, you know, they start to calm down and they feel comforted and loved. And when they're settled, I'll ask them if they're like okay, and they, and yeah, my little girl's always like, yeah, feeling better now. And then she just goes about her day like it's nothing.
How many children you got, just for viewers there?
Oh, so I've got two kids.
Yeah.
1 3-year-old and 1 2-year-old soon. And my boy's two.
When did you become a parent? At what age was that?
Gosh, age.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot counting.
Someone
my age.
Do the math. Someone do the math. But I don't know the math.
3 years
no
ago, what is it? 20, I reckon 24, 25, I became a mom. Yeah.
Yeah. Would you say that's too early to have a kid?
No way. Well, you know, life happens. Like, I don't think you can really plan these things. And if you can, that's great. But for me,
you don't plan having kids?
I mean, you can, but in my case, I couldn't. Oh, well. I didn't really think about that, I suppose. I just knew I always wanted to have children, and so I just, you know, did it. What I was saying before is like, because I've allowed my children that space to feel those things, countless times when I feel them, they actually allow me a space to feel it. Because sometimes when I get angry...
What do you mean by that? They allow you a space? How are kids allowing you space? Because a lot of parents are saying, hey, kids are hard to handle. They're always noisy, always in your space. So, and you reckon you found a strategy where you can kind of... kids can kind of give you space to allow you to feel the emotion too.
Yeah, definitely. So like, because I've allowed them the experience to feel safe in that way, this was like profound for me, like for them to do that to me. But because I've continuously allowed them that space.
Yeah.
And then when I've felt that way, like angry or impatient, and I just raise my voice so loud that it's, you know, just, yeah. And my daughter will just be like, she's not afraid of me. Like she is just, she'll give me a hug actually. And then she'll wait till I calm down and she'll say, are you feeling better? And then that was just such a humbling experience for me, because in that moment I was actually guilting myself for being angry, because I feel like a lot of parents out there feel shame and guilt for feeling these feelings around their children.
Is that a big thing for parents? Guilt and shame?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Like that, like they have to be like a perfect parent, always like just on top of things all the time and be emotionally like mature for them, which I think it is important as well.
So I guess in that moment, it's almost as if the child is parenting you. Because they're waiting and being patient with you, and then once you calm down, they come into you and be like, are you okay now?
Yeah, but I think it's incredibly important first that we do that for them, you know. And they, once we do that for them, they can kind of, I think that trust is like building, and that relationship is feeling more like a safe place because people are allowed to feel these things and not feel shame and guilt for feeling these things. And I feel like the human emotion is such, like, all the emotions on the spectrum are a huge part of the human experience.
Mm-hmm.
And to not shame or guilt any of it, but to kind of integrate that in a very beautiful, harmonious way, however we go about that.
You just got me thinking of an interesting concept when you're talking about your experience with your daughter and how she provides you space.
Mm.
And it actually just got me thinking that, so we've got inner child in us, and we've got wound, we've got trauma, we've got things we haven't healed from.
Yeah.
And at different parts of life, I think it's called neurological regression, we regress, or we go back to that state. Mm-hmm. To that age where we felt those emotions, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if your daughter at that moment is able to be there for you, is able to understand, obviously because you created that space for her, it's almost as if the parent and the child are both parenting each other.
Well, yeah, kind of, because it's like...
Isn't that beautiful?
I think it's wonderful. So it's not, I'm not just parenting my daughter, I'm also parenting my inner child. So when I see her in those states of emotions, whatever it is, I see myself, like I see the child, my child self that never got to experience that safe place.
Mm-hmm.
So I suppose in that moment, I kind of get the opportunity to be that person place.
And then when the child sees you in the low emotional state, who do they see? Do you reckon they're seeing, like, they're seeing our inner child? They at that moment, they're interacting with the, like, it's like a child interacting with another child.
Mm-hmm.
And then one child being like the adult and being able, because having patience when someone else is feeling emotional and being able to observe and wait it out. And
the term adult is so funny to me, because I feel like a kid still. I feel like we're like all little kids in like big people bodies. And we're all just trying to make sense of the world. And but
does the world make sense to you?
Does the world make sense to me? I think it's continuously, I don't know, like changing, unfolding, meaning new things at each moment, like our social structure right now, like it was so different back then, mm-hmm. the social structure back then. So, like, things are just constantly changing in that way.
How do you make sense of life? Is it things you like, you use as an anchor to make sense of the meaning of life? Like, define meaning in life? I think that's a better way to put it.
Define meaning in life?
Yeah.
I think you can make it mean absolutely anything you want, because it's your life and you get to choose your experiences. And... but there is, I feel like there is a, you know, there are natural consequences that come with certain choices that you make. And you can learn from those experiences. Like, if you continuously make choices that make you feel quite low, then you know that that's probably not the best choice to make.
Mm-hmm.
And if you continuously make choices that, you know, make you feel high and alive, then those are probably the best choices to make.
Well, yeah. The people smoking weed would say choices that make them feel high.
Yeah.
So
it's like, okay, you know, for some people that's totally fine. And for some people it doesn't work, but weed is also like a different kind of, well, it's funny. I have personally experienced this.
And oh, you got experience?
Yes, I have experience with
Nick.
Weed. And, well, because everything is vibration, right? Like, and I feel like science already has this down pat. Like, if you just go to the single atom of anything, things are constantly moving all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like weed holds a particular vibration. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a state of mind that's quite high and you ingest weed into your experience, you might feel low, you know, from that experience. Whereas if you are occupying a low state of mind, a low vibrational state, and you ingest weed that's got a high vibrational state than your state of being, then you kind of raise your vibration in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of like a temporary thing. Well,
I've never heard anybody say it like that. That's such an interesting way to look at it. So yeah. if everything holds a vibrational state,
yeah,
the impact it has on you is depending on the state you're inhabiting at the moment.
Yes,
so if you are at a really, really low state,
mm.
the substance can lift you up only according to the level of vibration it's got.
That's from my personal experience.
And if you are at a really high state, the substance become a hindrance.
Yeah.
Because your state is much higher than the substance, so the substance is bringing you down.
Yeah.
Wow. That's something worth pondering on.
Yeah, I quite like that one. Yeah, and it's like that with food. And it's just...
Food!
Well, yeah, I think everything holds a vibrational state.
Hungry Jacks brings people up or down?
To be honest, though, I feel like it's just... I don't know, I feel like your mind is probably the most powerful vibration. Like, your consciousness, because your consciousness can hold a vibration.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's so interesting, the way you were describing things early on. Does this mean, so I think early on you're talking about that we've been put into this earth to be expressive, and I think, I'm not sure what words you used, I'm just trying to remember what sort of words you used, but it had a question that came up to my mind in terms of free will.
Yeah.
And how free are we in this life, and if is free will even a thing?
Is free will even a thing?
Like you said, I think early on you're talking about you can express yourself this way and that way.
Mm.
And then later on you mentioned that if you do express yourself in a certain way and you feel low, then you know that that's not the way to go.
Yeah.
So then...
So how does freedom...
What the heck just happened there? Because did you actually freely express yourself, or you were controlled by a will that's already been premeditated?
Well, that's a cool question. Well... My personal belief, anyway, is that I believe that we are all love, and love is probably the most beautiful, highest vibration. And I believe that God created us in his image, which is love, and anything that kind of acts, or like the choices that stem away from that loving act, holds a low vibration.
Mm.
But yeah, the concept of love is so, what is like?
Well, if, you know what, let me throw you a curveball question.
Okay.
When's the last time you felt loved?
Oh, kind of right now.
Really? Oh, thanks.
Like, I'm just loving just being here. Like, at this moment in time, this is my present moment, this is my life, this is my reality. You are like my source of joy right now.
Oh, I'm doing something right, man.
Yeah. And we are each other's just source of joy in this moment that we have. And it's like the only thing for me that matters. And, you know, that's a conscious practice of being present, though, and emptying your mind in that way, I suppose, because it's so easy to get caught up in like your past or in the future.
Let's flip that question around. When's the last time you cried?
I actually cried like 4 mornings ago.
Nice. What happened?
What happened?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going through this very intense... I've done a lot of introspective work around relationships at the moment, as I'm currently going through a separation, and that kind of shifted my perspective on relationships, because I thought that that marriage I was in was so right for me, and to be honest, at that point in time everything felt so right.
Yeah.
Everything felt perfect. Everything felt like it was falling into place, and I regret absolutely nothing.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're always unfolding our experiences, and we're always learning.
Yeah.
And I suppose in that, in my marriage, like towards the end, I realized, well, for me, like I was desiring to grow in a different way. And I suppose our paths kind of just separated. And the more I wanted to just stay there, the more friction was happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't serving either of us. So I had to make that decision to be like, okay, like I need to let go. I need to let go of my idea of what a marriage was. I needed to let go of my idea of what my life was supposed to be like.
Hold on.
Yeah.
Two big topics there. I don't want to let this pass because I forget this.
God.
Your idea of marriage, what was it?
My idea of marriage? Well, growing up, you know, sitting in front of a TV or the Disney, it's like man and woman and, you know, I'm supposed to be with a man and I'm supposed to have children and I'm supposed to buy a house, and then that's just it, just to live that kind of life. That's all my idea was.
Yeah.
But for me personally, I was actually struggling with my sexuality, and I was struggling with that for I don't know, since I was 8, I suppose. Not struggling with it when I was 8, but I knew when I was around that age, I had a natural inclination and attraction towards the same gender, and that quite confused me a bit because, like, I was raised in a Christian family, and everything I saw outside of me was, you know, like a man and woman. So in my, I suppose, in my mind and my subconscious, that was just the narrative that my life was supposed to be like.
So would you say you're gay?
I don't know about these labels. What I was saying about doing a lot of introspective work after, like, towards the end of my marriage about relationships,
mm-hmm.
I had realized that, oh gosh, this is such a, like,
people, safe space.
Yes, yeah, safe space. Let me just give me a minute to think about this.
These are deep topics.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for just expressing your perspective on this.
This is quite crazy, actually.
It's all right.
It's not like a...
Oh, this is
I should process say this
sometimes. Take your time.
Okay, well, like I met a woman, and something like inside me just felt this like magnetic pull to her, which was just, I couldn't describe it. I didn't understand it. And I, for me personally, I feel like I'm quite spiritually and emotionally and energetically inclined. And I tend to go off my feelings before I understand what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt this strong pull. I didn't understand it. And, you know, I believe in the universe. I believe in signs and synchronicities. And I don't know, the divine, I don't fully know how to explain that. I can't fully describe this. But I know from a young age, all I wanted to do was to experience and embody unconditional love.
Mm.
And I'm not sure what was happening between me and this person, but I just felt this, well, let me just go back to my marriage first about what I learned there. Mm. So what I learned there was that I was incredibly codependent and I needed to release that. I needed to experience it, really, to be aware of it.
Yeah.
And then I suppose that taught me that taught me how important my personal boundaries are.
Yeah.
And keeping to that. And I've noticed a recurring pattern in my life. Like, even before my marriage, I was in like a codependency pattern with my previous relationships before that as well.
Yeah.
And it all kind of dates back to like my childhood, because I suppose that's my defense mechanism in feeling, I don't know, loved and safe, I suppose. And so, yeah, so after I became aware of that, okay, I was like, cool, let's just move on with life and learn from that and take on that lesson. And so then I met this beautiful woman, and
yeah.
I don't understand what this pool was.
Yeah.
This is a really big topic.
No, we'll just...
And I was really seeking to understand what this feeling was.
Yeah.
And the term twin flame came to mind. I have...
What does that mean?
Yeah, look, I'm still kind of going into that. But it's the only phenomenon that makes sense of my experience.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that it's a... maybe like a, I don't know if it's like a common thing. I'm not sure. And like, do you know much about like, and your, you know, your energy centers and your chakras and.
I've done a little bit of research on that.
Yeah, I've only done a little bit of research too, but I felt them in my personal experience. Anyway, so the more I was connecting with this person, the more it's like something inside me like shifted, and oh gosh, it feels so weird to say. It feels really weird to say. So I don't know, so can we like sometime maybe cut this out maybe?
We'll chop it.
Okay.
Do you want us to chop
it? We can talk about it, but okay. Can we maybe chop it later?
Yeah.
Okay. Maybe.
Okay.
And so I just felt this concept of the twin flame is like, you know, before your soul comes into Earth, we've kind of had this agreement where before the soul comes into Earth, it splits into two and it embodies two physical bodies. And one is like the divine, predominantly the divine masculine, and the other is predominantly the divine feminine, and it's irrespective of gender because it's energy. And that's what I've learned anyway about it, and it was the only thing making sense. So when I encountered this person, it kind of activated something inside of me, and it's like her heart was mine and I could feel her, and it's really a mystical feeling. And I don't know if that is common, but in the midst of our conversations, I could feel my codependency play up, but not as strongly. And I was quite aware of it this time. And I would, place my boundaries around that. And I think there was a time where I was feeling fearful because I didn't want to replicate the same relationship.
Yeah.
And so I acted out in surrender, and I was just surrendering this whole thing because I had no idea what was going on. And so I cried that one night because I just felt this release and trusting in something greater than myself.
Mm.
And I went to bed great. And then the next morning I woke up crying, and I just felt this wave of unconditional love pour over me, and this voice or this wisdom or something that was telling me that the whole point of this twin flame concept was that it's the embodiment of unconditional love. It's the balance between the divine masculine and the divine feminine. And when you're in union together, we can live harmoniously. And I think it's more than just whatever my relationship is with this person, because I think it serves as a representation of what we should be as a whole. Like, because there's a battle between like men and women, like the patriarchal society and the feminist movement. And we're all just trying to find that balance within each other.
Mm.
And I think people are looking at it from like a physical point of view rather than an energetic one. Because, and there's also a lot of judgment around sexuality and homosexuality and all of that. Mm.
Do you see why there's a lot of conflict around that, around, because people are looking at the physical body of a female and a male and they're saying it doesn't. So if you were to go male, female, female, it doesn't match up physically. Do you agree that physically it doesn't match up? So the only way to create a baby is to have obviously sperm from the male.
Yeah.
And the egg from the woman.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm guessing the biggest debate here is that physically it doesn't match up.
Physically it doesn't match up. What do you mean? Meaning that
physically, if you have two of the same gender, they don't produce anything.
Yeah.
Right. And the only reason I'm going to this topic is because you mentioned along that people are focusing too much on the physical,
mm-hmm.
and they should be focusing on the energy side of things.
Yeah.
And see things through energy and see through things through the spiritual side of things.
Yeah.
And my answer to that is if the reason why people can't bypass the physical is because they seeing that if you put the same element, male, female, female,
mm-hmm.
you actually can't produce anything.
Yeah, but that's just one way of looking at the whole thing. Like, producing, when you say anything, it's really just producing babies. Like, producing
life.
Producing people.
But babies is not just babies. It's life.
Mm-hmm.
It's existence. It's consciousness. It's you're producing a whole, in like, you're producing pretty much an expression of God.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well,
how do we find alignment between the energy side and the physical side? How do we find alignment?
I think it's accepting everything. I think it's the ability to accept everything and to perceive things without any sort of judgment, and to just kind of watch all of that unfold in a really mystical, beautiful way. I feel like it's quite unexplainable, but like, imagine if everybody was the same in this world. The world would be so boring. And like, I feel like everybody's uniqueness and difference and perceptions make this world more colourful in a way. And
Ramble?
What do you mean? Rainbow? No. More colours. But like,
you know what? I'm just going to say this on the podcast. I hated that because I used to love watching rainbows when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And it didn't have any meanings. Like, mm-hmm. it was just existence. It was just something that I would watch to get a realization of what life is.
Yeah.
Right. Now it's got a stigma behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just takes the purity out of my childhood.
Yeah.
I hate it.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I don't think, you know, the whole, like, love is... like the whole pride thing, you know, I feel like that was kind of maybe built on the fact that people had to suppress those feelings. And now, I don't know, like I don't know. For me personally, I don't believe like love is prideful. It's not something to like show off. It's something that's naturally expressed, and it's expressed in many forms, like can be expressed through art, can be expressed through, you know, your career, your whatever your passion is, literally anything.
So if we have to show off our sexuality, show off what we are, it can only, like, I heard someone say they were talking about, they were using a similar kind of concept for money. They were saying, money, real money, real wealth doesn't speak. Like, it's quiet.
Yeah.
Right? And it's those who don't have the wealth that show a lot.
Mm-hmm.
They show cars, they show outfit, they show too much. They're showing, always showing. So there's almost this concept of when there is a lack within you and an imbalance within you, you want to show to the world that you got it all together.
Yeah.
But when everything is perfect, and not perfect is probably not the right word, when everything is aligned and everything is at peace and all your energies are well aligned and within you internally, you feel at home, you feel at peace. You don't need to brag about it. You don't need to show it to anybody. You don't need anybody's validation.
Yeah.
Right? So I don't care what people come in and tell, oh, I'm this sexuality. But the truth of the matter is, if you were complete in who you were as a person, then there is no need to show.
Yes.
Right? I get even sometimes the topic is oppression, right? Is people feeling oppressed, so they have to show.
Yeah.
So if you feel a high level of oppression, you want to fight against that oppression. And so expression on the fullest, so it's like two sides of the spectrum. You understand what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I do.
So oppression is on one side of the spectrum, is you feel extremely low and pushed down.
Yeah.
And so you want to combat that oppression. And so you go on the fullest side of the expression. It's like on the ultimate side of the expression, which is on the other side of the spectrum too.
Yeah.
So there's two types of people, the ones that are feeling so low, so they have to push so high.
Yeah.
But really, the key is balance, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, it's all about that balance.
The key is balance. Yeah. Is
it's a balance of that perception, the ability to understand both those sides and bring them together. And that's why I think awareness and consciousness is so important to just have. And Yeah, that's quite cool that you said that. Yeah.
And so if balance is the game here, just going back on the topic we were talking about earlier on, when you're saying that we need to focus more on the energy side of things and not on the physical side of things.
Yeah.
How can both side of reality, I think I was going to use the word coexist, but they already coexist. But what I'm really trying to say is I feel like one perception of life is that in order for things to be fully aligned, right, the physical and the energy side have to become one.
Yes.
Right?
Definitely.
So
if
we say having this certain perception on how we function in terms of energy.
You could also say that, not like you said, the physical and the, did you say the spiritual?
Yes.
Yeah, there's physical and spiritual. I feel like spiritual is also emotional. People want to look at it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't see emotions, you know. You can feel it. Just like spirituality, it's more to do with things you can't see.
Mm.
And that's exactly like emotions as well.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think finding the balance in that.
So if the spiritual and the physical has to become one, then how would you explain the, like, if you said female to female, and we talked about that one of the biggest stumbling blocks that's stuck on a lot of people's mind is the fact that they can't reproduce, right? The reproduction bit is the bit. So the two physical bodies can't reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
But if the two souls come together spiritually, they might feel like they're twin flame, for example. Like in your case, right? I think the question I'm really trying to say is how do you think that can work if physically it doesn't match, but spiritually it matches?
Yeah, well, I think it totally depends on the individual person, because every single person has different desires, needs, and wants in their life. Mm. And, you know, people who are, I don't know, like two genders that are together and they want to have children, like, obviously that's going to be a stumbling block, or they have to go through certain obstacles to have their own children. And, I suppose that's just their desire in the way that they do that. For me personally, like, I don't actually desire any more children, because I feel like I on this, I suppose, personal mission to raise the whole world's vibration to a higher consciousness, which is...
Is that your mission?
Well, for me, yeah, I like it. Yeah, nice, like, which is unconditional love. I just want to spread that to the world, I suppose, and allow everybody to just be in their most beautiful and natural form, however that may look.
How are you going to do that?
I'm not sure yet. I would just... Firstly, like, my children are my first priority, so I would like to just be with them for the first years of their life, and then eventually I would like to get into social work, because I'm all about collective responsibility and the way that we interact with each other, and I would like to just contribute there, however that may look.
So in your new discovery of the journey you're going through right now, in terms of discovering yourself much deeper and where does God fit in this?
Yeah. Like, what does God mean to you?
Well, that's the question I'm really trying to understand here.
Okay.
Is, like, where does it fit in terms of, like, what's your perception of God to begin with? I think that's probably the best question to start.
My perception of God. God, it's like everything. I don't know. Beautiful. Love. Love is just the biggest thing for me anyway. And I just had this knowing as a kid, like, well, you know, I was raised in a belief that if you do these things, you're going to go to hell. And if you do these things, you're going to go to heaven. And that for me, and then in the midst of all that, God is such a loving God. And I'm like, this makes absolutely no sense to me. Like, if a God is such a loving God and he created everything, why would he send his creations to a fiery hell? Like, that made no sense to me. But in my inner knowing, I suppose, I still believed in that loving God. And my only wish when I was like a kid was that I wished everyone I loved were in heaven with me. Like, if that's a thing, you know? And then as life went on and I, you know, experienced life, I was starting to realize that heaven is really just a state of mind. It's a vibration.
You reckon hell is also a state of mind?
I reckon hell is also a state of mind. Hell is complete separation from your God self, from what your created value is really. And I suppose that's where the free will and the free choices come from. It's kind of weird to look at it that way if it's, you know, like, it's supposed to be a free will, but I don't know, I think that's the wonderfulness thing or wonderful thing about life is that where there's a, I don't know, there's a duality, there's a polarity to life that allows us to experience these things. And, like, you know, we wouldn't know left if there was no right, we wouldn't know up if there was no down, we wouldn't know love if there was no hate, and so on. And I think I'm going
no. So you've got quite interesting perspective of life. So, like, how do you describe mental health? Like, what does mental health mean to you?
So mental health in the midst of that,
because you've got, like, your views on life is quite extreme in terms of, like, love is the center of everything.
Yeah.
And so mental health looks like what to you?
Well, I think, you know, like we were saying, it's a state of mind, but I think there's a lot of factors that play into mental health. Like, you know, obviously, well, like when you're born into this world, into its current social structure, you're already being given these cards to be dealt with. Like, you're born into a race, you're born into a gender, you're born into a religion, your social status,
your life is controlled.
Your geographic location. I feel like you consciously choose it before you come into this world. And having these cards that you've been dealt with and the family that you're born into, I don't know, I think for me it gives you kind of a blueprint to play with in life. Mm. Like, I look at life as a game. Like, there's an artist, Avicii, and he says, life is a game made for everyone and love is the prize. And I feel like the game is so individual to you and your perception and your uniqueness. And, there's so many things to just explore because everybody has different...
Different. I know you're so big on love, so here's a question for you.
Okay.
Is there a relationship you regret?
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
Like, it could be platonic, it could be friendship. Is there a relationship that you look back and be like, man, this was not a good relationship. I shouldn't have got myself mixed into this.
No, I think they all served a purpose and they're all part of the experience. And ultimately, this person that I, whoever, everybody in my life, I just have to believe that they were supposed to be there and that, in a way, they are me.
What do you mean by that?
In a way. Well, you know this.
What do you mean?
It goes back to God and to consciousness. I believe that we're all collective consciousness and we all come into this world to experience this physical separation. You know, you're there and I'm here. But on the energetic level, we're all just one.
Yeah.
And experiencing each other, like the ocean, for example. Like, it goes into rivers and streams and waterfalls and all these, I don't know, beautiful water places, but we're all still one in that way.
It makes it hard to process. I don't, like, if we are really all one from the inside, why is there so much hate? Why is there so much trouble in the world? Why is there so much fighting, so much war?
I think it's because of people are unconscious and they have no awareness, or like they don't know better. And, you know, something that a good friend always says, you can't apply what you don't know. And yeah, that's you. How do you apply these? Yeah, like,
So would you, like, you're saying a lot of beautiful stuff that I love listening to. I could listen to you all day. But I think the big question here is your childhood.
My childhood.
Because the desires that we have here and now, a large part of it were generated from our childhood, right? The desires that we have now is almost, like, I think for 9 out of 10 people, it's quite the opposite of what they experienced in their childhood. So they experience a certain event on their childhood, and then it gets us feeling like, man, I don't want to experience this ever again. What's the opposite of this? And you want to pursue that opposite and get to the other side of it.
Well, it's because as a child, you feel things so deeply, and you know that if it's not good, it's not good. And
how was your childhood? Was it a happy childhood?
It was, and yeah, like, for the first part of it, for me personally, I grew up with 4 other siblings, so there was 5 of us. And then my parents divorced when I was 10, and that caused me to rebel and experience life. And we had my mom's ex, who came into our lives and put down military rules, and that was obviously really, I don't know how to explain those bits too much, but I don't know. I just think that it was all kind of don't know, it's all part of the blueprint of life, I suppose. Like all of these experiences, all of these people that came into my life and yeah, right down from childhood. And that was just part of the, I don't know, like, you know, when you program a game, I suppose it's just part of the programming. And then like when you get older, you kind of develop a more conscious mind and you can kind of see the consequences of your actions and you become more aware of things.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, children are consciously, I mean, children are living subconsciously and...
So again,
yeah.
How was your childhood?
How was my childhood? I don't really know how to answer that. like feeling wise?
Yeah, feeling wise.
Feeling wise?
Did you have the best childhood you could possibly get? Would you wish your childhood upon your children? I think that's the best way to put it.
Oh, parts of it, yeah. Definitely. And
like what part? Like what part brings you so much joy? That you would wish upon your children.
The parts that brought me so much joy. Like just being with my siblings and playing in the backyard and doing life with the people that you love in the most loving way possible.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I would wish those parts. But I don't necessarily regret or feel... any animosity towards the parts that weren't like joyful because
you have a story, so I can put it into perspective. Like what's a story that you remember that you reckon really affected you as a child? Like this little Bernadette experiencing these big emotions and it was too much for her to take.
Well, yeah, for like having my mum bring in somebody like a kind of a stranger into our life that would put down rules and stuff and not having had built a relationship with us first, that definitely affected us. And yeah, that wasn't a fun experience, but I believe it was necessary. Why do I believe it was necessary?
Yeah. Right. You adopted Army Wiz.
Yeah. Adopted Army Wiz. I don't know, because I suppose that it allows me to experience the opposite side of it, I suppose. Like having experienced what it felt like to be trapped and to be weak mentally and to feel powerless.
Weak?
Yeah, like maybe weak or just like shame and guilt for my emotions and not being able to express that and like living in fear, I suppose, to express those things because it didn't go a certain someone's way. And
isn't that funny? Because right now we're having the same conversation we had at the start regarding the relationship with you and your kids.
Yeah, well, that's funny how it turns out.
And you use these exact same words too.
Yeah.
So it's almost like life has given you a chance to reenact your childhood with your kids.
Oh, for sure.
And then choose a different path.
Yeah.
Instead of what you experienced.
Yeah. That's the funny thing about life, isn't it?
So motherhood, motherhood seems to be a huge chunk of what you value, correct?
Yes.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, definitely.
So what is career for
the career?
Yeah, where is career in all this?
Well,
do you believe in a career?
I feel like being a mom is a career in itself. It's a full-time job.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, yeah, like, you know, when my children are older and want to go do beautiful things and create wonderful things for the world, or, you know, express themselves authentically. And I feel like when that kind of goes, then I can, I don't know, I suppose I'll evolve or unfold into a different kind of person and my values will change. Like I said, like everything's constantly
What would you say to people watching this that might be, you know what, Bernadette, you need to get a job. You need to get a full-time job. Because I'm sure someone is thinking that. We need more people working full-time jobs. Because obviously, if you're not working for a full-time job, then
mm-hmm.
is that fair to say that you got assistance elsewhere, correct? Like you've got some sort of financial assistance somewhere.
Oh, right? Yeah, I've got financial assistance, thanks to Australian government.
Hey, my tax money. So there's people there that will probably be quite annoyed at you. That you could put the kids in daycare, you could do whatever, and you can get a full-time job. What would you say to that?
If they're annoyed at me, I would say, look inside yourself.
Do you not feel any threat, or you don't feel any need to get a full-time job at all?
No way. No way. If I have the opportunity to be a stay-at-home mom, which I do because I have an awesome relationship with my mom now and my family, and all those hard challenges that, came in childhood, it all kind of made us all stronger as a family together, which is just so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, now I have the opportunity to stay with my mom and my siblings, so I have an awesome support, and mm-hmm. I understand how important that is for just mothers. I wish that on all mothers, but I also understand that may not be the case. Mm. And if I had to go to work, I would do it, but because
you don't really want to do it, do you?
No, I don't desire it. Not at the early stages of their life.
She's not going to do it.
But there are also some mothers that do desire to do that, and that's completely fine. And that's what makes them feel fulfilled and alive, which I think is so okay as well,
It looks like you've dedicated a fair bit of your energy to your family.
Yeah, definitely.
And that obviously must be pretty higher up in your value system.
Yes.
And do you think every mother should be a stay-at-home mom? Especially in the early years of their children? What's the consequences of not being a stay-at-home mom? What do you reckon would have happened if you didn't stay at home with your kids in the early years?
I feel like that's something to be discussed between them and their partner if they have one. But I also think, I know not all mothers want to be a stay-at-home mom. Some find fulfillment in working, and that's what makes them feel more alive. And what if that's what is good for them mentally and emotionally, then it's
mm-hmm.
what's good for the kids in that way, I suppose, because the mother can kind of show up in a more full way for herself.
Yeah.
Not all mothers or women are the same in that way. And that's
what I'm picking from you here is that it's not about how you choose to live. It's about what sort